Hello and welcome to the Combat and Classics podcast. This is Brian Wilson in Dallas, Texas.
Shiloh Brooks at Princeton University in Princeton, New Jersey.
And Jeff Black at St. John's College in Annapolis, Maryland.
We are in the home stretch of Homer's Iliad. Today is book two. I will be doing an overview, and Jeff is going to ask an opening question. So, book 22, we are in the midst of kind of the final battle slash battles in this story, and we open with Achilles chasing after who he thinks is Agenor, a Trojan warrior, but is actually Apollo, leading Achilles away from Troy. And then Apollo reveals himself to be a god and kind of teases Achilles a little bit. And Achilles turns around, starts running towards Troy, and goes after Hector. Hector considers his options. His parents implore him to come into the city and not fight Achilles, because both of them say, if you do this, you're gonna die. And so Achilles chases Hector around Troy, heads him off from getting in the gates, because Hector doesn't decide what to do, and then just runs weirdly. And I find this strange. And so maybe we'll talk about why he makes all these considerations, weighs his options, and then just takes off. And doesn't take off towards the gates for some reason, just starts running. So then, shockingly enough, Achilles kills Hector and then hooks his body up, pierces his feet between his heels and his Achilles tendon. I think that's where it happens. And then drags his body around Troy, which there's a lot of weird foreshadowing with Achilles and bows and this scene, especially where he pierces his heels. And also of note is that Hector is in Achilles' old armor. Mm. So in some way, Achilles is kind of killing a version of himself. But that is book 22. And over to you, Jeff, for the opening question.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. Yeah, he's wearing Achilles' armor, which Patroclus was wearing, and I can maybe editorialize a little bit. Is it possible the armor doesn't quite fit? I don't want to say that Hector's bigger than Achilles, but it looks like there's a gap, and that's where Achilles stabs him with his spear. There's a lot of interesting detail in the actual death of Hector, but you got pretty close to what I was thinking of for a question. When you were wondering why he runs, how he runs around the city, I wanted to ask about something that happens a little bit before that. So you're right that everybody who's watching, gods and humans included, I think, want Hector to go into the city and, hide along with the rest of the Trojans, those who have been able to survive Achilles' assault thus far. But Hector decides to stay out of the city and face Achilles. And once he does face him, he's immediately terrified. Achilles is like fire, as we've been told repeatedly over a bunch of books. And so he turns and runs in the way that you described. And he can only be stopped from running by being deceived by Athena. And that's what gets Hector to stand still so that Achilles can catch up with him and kill him. But it's the very beginning of that sequence that I wanted to start by asking about. Why does Hector decide to stay outside the gates of Troy?
Well, in his weighing of his options, which starts around line 90, Hector seems to think if he goes inside, he'll be called a coward. Mm. And if he stays outside, he'll probably die. But which is the, to kind of do a little bit of a callback to our last pod, like, which is the more virtuous option? Mm-hmm. But then he does neither, which is kind of what's confusing. He tries to outrun the swift-footed Achilles, who is well known to be the fastest guy out there. But he also isn't getting caught, which seems weird too. So... Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's It's a confusing, it's super confusing. And I'll throw a plug in here in the early part of the pod, which is Ismail Kader's Essays on World Literature.
Uh-huh.
It's just a short collection. Kader's an Albanian novelist who has been apparently shortlisted for the Nobel Prize like a million times, but has one of the most fascinating essays on the Iliad, as well as Hamlet is in there too.
Oh, wow.
And he kind of posits that this is all a dream of some kind, because there's no way that the swift-footed Achilles couldn't catch Hector if he wanted to. So this is like some weird, trippy dream sequence in Kader's imagining. But anyway, sidetracked. Why does Hector decide to stay outside the gates? Hector seems to think it's either I'm a coward or I might die, and which is worse. So I guess that to build on that question is why does he just run away? Mm-hmm. That's not even an option he really considers and reasons through. So why does he decide to just run? And then why can't Achilles catch him without Athena's help?
Well, I think the decision to run, it strikes me at least as this is fear. Why he doesn't run straight for the gates, that might not have been an option for him. You guess that the gates would be at his back and Achilles would be at his front. And so, you know, it would be the easiest thing seeing Achilles coming on to turn around and flee into the gates. There's some reference to him getting support from his allies who might shoot from the walls. It does seem like that would be the most reasonable choice. Maybe he's so overcome by fear that he's not really thinking very carefully about things. As to the accusation of cowardice, I thought maybe I could just read the first option that he envisions. This is, just like you said, around line 90. I think I've got it at line 99 in particular. This is what Hector says. Ah me, if I go inside the gates and the walls, Polydamas will be the first to put reproach on me, since he told me to lead the Trojans to the city during that fatal night when noble Achilles rose up. But I did not listen. Surely it would have been far better. But now, since I have brought the army to ruin through my blind folly, I feel shame before the Trojans and the Trojans' wives with trailing robes, lest perhaps some other baser than I may say, Hector, trusting in his own might, brought ruin on the army. So will they say, but for me it would be far better to meet Achilles man to man and slay him and so return home, or myself perish gloriously before the city. Then he goes on to envision a second option, which I also think is really interesting and we can think about. But this doesn't look to me like a fear of the accusation of cowardice exactly. It looks like the fear is that he will be responsible. It will be said of him by an inferior person, a man baser than him, that he's responsible for the destruction of the Trojan army, and it will be true. And that's why he stays outside to face Achilles. Does that make any sense to us? Well, first, am I reading it right? And then second, if I'm reading it right, does it make any sense?
So if he stays outside, then he's not responsible for the destruction of the army. Is that what you're saying? If he stays out, no one will hold him accountable if Troy falls.
No.
Is that right?
No, I think he'll... I mean, isn't it just correct that if he's responsible for the army when he goes in, you know, the fate of the army when he goes into Troy, he's responsible for the fate of the army if he stays outside of Troy, too. In other words, his choice of staying outside or going back in, you know, that doesn't change anything in terms of...
Yeah, but he doesn't see it that way.
But he doesn't see it that way.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. So then what does he think the difference is going to be? Is it that he's going to do such a great thing that it will somehow expunge his responsibility for the fate of the army? Or does he think, is it a kind of suicide? I'm responsible for destroying the Trojan army, and so I might as well just stay out here and get myself killed. It's hard.
There's something, and I think I brought this up in pods, but it's been a while, called going internal. And that's basically when you're exhausted, when you're hungry, when you haven't slept, you kind of reach a point where external stimuli get shut off and you're just in your own head and you're just thinking too much instead of kind of see a target, hit a target, make a decision, bias for action, those kind of things. And so I wonder, and so Hector not necessarily making sense makes sense to me if you're at that point, if you're at the point in the fight where you've been out on the battlefield hooking and jabbing, you've kind of reached your limit and you don't really have anything else in the tank. You start to just kind of ponder because your body just has nothing left. Mm-hmm. And so you just start thinking about all this stuff and you don't necessarily think clearly. Mm-hmm. And so it also makes sense that he would just run after that, because all he's left with is that little bit of adrenaline from fear, and doesn't see fighting Achilles, like the human animal part of his brain doesn't see fighting Achilles as, you know, a viable option, and so he just books.
Yeah, I think it's fair to say even the rational part of his brain has every reason to think it's not a viable option for him to face Achilles solo. There's just been no sign that Hector can hold up to Achilles solo. Hector has scarcely been able to hold up to the second rank Greek heroes in a one-on-one. So, yeah, I mean, it could be that when he thinks about it, what he thinks is, if I go in to the city, I'll be ashamed of myself. And it's worse to be ashamed of myself than to be dead. So, you know, because I'll be justly ashamed of myself. The people who make these accusations, even the bad people who make these accusations, it'll be right. I screwed up. I squandered our gains. So it's better to be dead than to face that experience. But there's a chance. Who knows? Maybe I'll kill Achilles. And so that's even better. That's a better option. And then when he sees Achilles, he can't quite live up to the thought, or he can't quite hold himself still in the face of the thought that it's better to be dead than ashamed. But, you know, he doesn't run back into the city. Maybe that's the reason why, because then there's the shame option he's got to face, even if Troy does persist for much longer, because they're now besieged and they can hold out. And so maybe that's why he takes this kind of third option, which is to run obliquely to the path between Achilles and the gates to Troy and start doing these circuits of the city.
Remind me what role Athena plays, because doesn't she say something to him and Achilles both? Right? I'm just wondering, I mean, Hector's not exactly clear thinking. There's someone manipulating the situation.
Right.
And that has to be taken account of when you're taking account of his motives.
Yeah. Well, I think there is something that maybe this is what you're thinking about. There's something that Athena does to get Hector to stop running, which is she assumes the form of his brother Deiphobus, his most loved brother, I think it is.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Right.
And this reassures Hector, and it turns out it reassures Hector in a kind of reasonable way, although I think maybe only locally it makes some sense. More generally, he still has no hope against Achilles. But you remember the way it works is Achilles throws at Hector, and he doesn't get him. You know, Hector survives the throw of the spear, but Athena magically returns the spear back to Achilles' hands without Hector noticing. So Achilles now has a spear in his hand. Hector throws, and the shield protects. He hits Achilles bang on the shield. He does better than Achilles in some respects with his first throw, because he ducks Achilles' first throw, but he hits Achilles' shield with his first throw. And now he doesn't have a spear. There's nobody to bring it back to him. So he looks to Deiphobus.
Right.
Right. And by the way, it doesn't look like he was ever anticipating that they'd fight Achilles 2-on-1, which is the only reasonable thing that you would do at this point. But he looks to Deiphobus for the second spear, and there's no Deiphobus. Poof, he's gone. And then Hector realizes this is the end. And then he does something really interesting, which is he closes hand to hand with Achilles, even though it's short sword against spear. In other words, he'll never get close enough to kill Achilles, right? He's just got no chance, right? He's brought, so to speak, a knife to a gunfight. And sure enough, Achilles finds the hole in Patroclus's, namely his armor, and kills him.
Why doesn't anyone help Hector? He's running right by the walls. Like, Priam is talking to him in the beginning of the book from inside the walls of Troy. Hecuba is talking to Hector, I think, is talking to Hector from inside the walls of Troy. It seems like there's a decent amount of straggler Trojans that might still be out on the field. And there's almost certainly archers up on the walls. So either A, why doesn't anybody help Hector? Or B, why does Homer write it so that nobody is helping Hector?
Yeah, I can think of a couple things that might be helpful. One is a piece of the text and one is a speculation. At some point in one of the tours, maybe on the third lap around Troy, Achilles has to tell the Myrmidons not to hit Hector with a missile. I take that to mean that the Greeks control the field. They have superiority. They might even have supremacy. There might be no enemy forces active any longer in the field. Achilles has just been so good. He's mopped up the whole thing, and now the Trojans, aside from Hector, are besieged. And the second thing is, tell me whether you guys share my judgment in this. The other sons of Priam are just inferior to Hector. They're just not impressive. A lot of them are dead, by the way. Achilles has been knocking them off with some frequency, and Priam mentions this, but there's just nobody of Hector's caliber who could come back out. They need to make a sortie to rescue him. That's the thing you would do. And it looks like they're all so overwhelmed that's not going to happen.
Yeah, because is Aeneas wounded at this point? Did Aeneas get wounded like two books back, or was he not wounded?
Oh, that's a good question. He was certainly spirited away, but was he wounded? I don't remember.
Because I'm just trying to remember when Aeneas gets wounded, because he gets wounded at some point in the book. Yeah. I don't think he got wounded, but I'm thinking about the kind of Aeneas and Diomedes characters in each of the camps, right? That you need an Aeneas or you need a Diomedes who is trying to gain status that doesn't have it through birth, and so needs to kind of establish themselves on the battlefield. And Aeneas is spirited away, so maybe he's not in play. And then I like what you said about the other sons of Priam, because we just saw Lycaon, you know, just strip naked and surrender. Priam mentions that Polydorus was also recently killed. I don't remember Polydorus getting killed. I don't know if that's mentioned in the last book. I think we mentioned he might have been killed in the last book. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I mean, Paris is a schmuck, right? Like, Paris doesn't... So it's very interesting. I don't think we brought up this point about how, you know, Hector is seemingly the very obvious kind of head and shoulders above all the other Priam's sons. And that with Aeneas gone too, there's no one who has the kind of chutzpah to actually either go out of the gates to help Hector or even like throw a spear or shoot an arrow or something. And so, yeah.
By the way, the point that you're making now has implications for what we were just discussing, right? This question that, you know, why does Hector stay out? Well, it looks like it's out of shame. There might, if there are no other Trojans of his caliber, and in fact he's concerned that inferior people might make an accusation against him, even though the accusation is true, shouldn't he be somewhat insulated against this accusation, right? Shouldn't he be able to bear up? You know, he could say to himself, couldn't he, there's nobody else who could have made these decisions, and I did the best I could under the circumstances. It was tactically wise to press the advantage. We shouldn't have withdrawn after we got all the way to the Greek ships. And so even though now the result shows that, you know, the result is that the army has been massacred by Achilles, we didn't know that Achilles was going to return to the fight. For all we knew, Achilles was going to stay by his ships and let us push the Greeks away. So there's no real justice in the accusation that I ruined the Trojan army, and as such, I shouldn't feel ashamed, especially when inferior judges make that claim. There's nobody here in the city who has the right to judge me that way. Maybe Hector should have mustered arguments like that, and done the wise thing and retreated.
Hasn't Hector also seen the writing on the wall for a long time? Like, he told his wife, you know, essentially prophesied. And so you say shame, but look, Achilles is back. Like, I think he could also just see that this ain't going anywhere fast. You know what I mean? I mean, so let's just get this thing. It's been however many years. It's time.
Yeah. Yeah. And suppose he has that thought. What follows from that? Does fighting Achilles outside the gates follow rather than retreating?
Well, yes, I suppose it does if he cares the same way Achilles cared in the previous book for how he dies and its beauty. Yeah. He's not, him and Achilles aren't so different, maybe in that respect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the place where that's clearest is the thing he says to himself right before he engages Achilles hand to hand, right? He says, you know, oh, there's no day Phobos. Some god has played a trick on me. My time is up. I'm going to die now. Let's see if I can't do something before I die. And that, in some ways, I find a more admirable moment than the moment when he decides not to retreat in the city. Because then I think, you know, not only is it up eventually for Troy, not only is that clear, it's up now for him. That's clear. And he says, you know, I'm going to see if I can do this beautifully.
Mm-hmm. In terms of Achilles chasing someone, we have the scene of Agenor, or Apollo pretending he's Agenor and Achilles chasing after this Agenor Apollo character before he chases after Hector. What is that bringing to the story? Are there parallels we can kind of draw out from that? Or is this just like, this is just costume change? This is sometimes you just buy time for a costume change in between scenes or
well,
change the set.
It is consistent with the general thought that the gods are going to prolong this because it ensures that everybody except for Hector, who's survived thus far, gets inside the walls by taking Achilles away from the slaughter of the retreating Trojans and you know, killing people who are fleeing is the easiest of all the different ways to kill them in this kind of warfare, I think. Achilles seems to be as fast as a chariot, so he's kind of both cavalry and infantry in one, and so it looks like he can run down anybody. And so if anybody's going to survive his onslaught and get back into the walls, he needs to be distracted by one of the gods. And then that they survive to get in the walls makes the end of Hector more poignant because the friends are there and they're watching this happen. They're bemoaning it as it happens. I think, you know, there is a kind of symmetry in the image of Achilles pursuing Agenor than Achilles pursuing Hector, but there's also kind of tactical strategic reasons why this has to happen now. Do you guys want to take a second to look at the second possibility that Hector considers? The first one is the part I read you, and then he says, you know, it would be better for me to fight Achilles. I might win or I might die. But then he raises this possibility that he could take off all his armor, set down his weapons, and negotiate with Achilles. And we know from what's happened with a previous person who didn't negotiate exactly, he supplicated him, but we know with what happened to Lycaon in the previous book, this would be a very bad idea. And Hector realizes it too. And then he says this kind of funny thing. He says, why does my heart debate these things with me? I'm reading right around 120. Let it not be that I approach him as a suppliant, and he not pity me nor have respect for me, but slay me out of hand unarmed. that would happen, I think. As if I were a woman when I have taken off my armor. There is no way now I may from oak tree or from rock have a lover's chat with him, just as youth and maiden. Youth and maiden chat the one with the other. It would be better to clash in strife as quickly as possible. Let us know to which of us the Olympian will grant glory. So he has this funny moment. Not only does he foresee what Lycaon didn't foresee, but he says it would be as if we were lovers. And that can't happen. There's no way that could happen. Do you guys have a sense of what we're supposed to make of that?
Well, they're not going to reconcile. I mean, is that what, like, that's ridiculous. After all of this time, imagine if the Iliad was like, and then Hector and Achilles had a conversation in which they decided they liked each other and they were friends, and then it was over. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just not an option for men of their type.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It happened with Ajax and Hector, though, right? Or was it Ajax and Hector? Who was the one that was like, oh, you had my grandfather, you know, ate at your grandfather's house, and so let's be cool.
It's always so hard to remember these guys.
It's true.
Yeah. Glaucus and Sarpedon, I think. I could be wrong. It's a big book. Yeah. Go ahead, Shiloh.
I was going to say it's true, but Achilles is an altogether different situation than, you know, the rage is real.
Yeah. But it does bring up this possibility. I mean, who... among the Trojans, if anybody is best suited to be a friend of Achilles, right? Just on the grounds of excellence, excellent people might see one another, see themselves in one another. There might be a reason to think that were they not on opposing sides of the war and were all the things that have been done not done, Achilles and Hector would have the most in common. It's kind of tricky, because I do think Hector is a different kind of person than Achilles is, but still, just thinking of the possibility, I think, does bring out how ridiculous it is, the way that Shiloh indicates, and also how sad it is in some ways, that it be necessary that the two most splendid examples of human beings on one side and the other must try to exterminate one another because of, you know, what Paris did with Helen.
I was going to say, you're comparing the two. I mean, Hector has a kind of emotional maturity that strikes me as incompatible with Achilles. You know, like when he's sitting there with his son, we had a great talk about that, about when he's got his son and his wife and all these sort. Like, you can't picture Achilles having that kind of emotional depth. Mm-hmm. Maybe the rage is a certain kind of emotional depth, but I just can't see Hector and Achilles. I mean, it's interesting, the thought that they would be friends. I just can't see Hector looking at Achilles and saying, I empathize with you, or something like that, because it's just such a, his concerns are the hot lady the king took away from me, you know, these sorts of things. Whereas Hector is like, my people, my wife, my son, my father, you know what I mean? It's just a different, he's on a different plane of moral concern in a way than Achilles is. But that's interesting that it leads them, though, Jeff, as you were saying, to similar moral conclusions about the nobility of their death.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they do have that in common, but the planes on which they're functioning, and the way they understand their own activity. Hector seems to me to have been throughout the book a man who's fighting for Troy, not for Hector.
Mm-hmm.
And Achilles is a man who's fighting for Achilles, not for the Greeks. You know what I mean? And so there's just this sort of disconnect between the two that makes them, I think, ultimately incompatible.
Well, I'm really glad you brought that up, Shiloh, because that different motivation, I think, is key to understanding this. And that's that, you know, we had the saying in the Marine Corps, like, you know, you can join up and for your country and to protect your homeland and like all this yada, yada, yada. But when stuff starts blowing up around you, like you're fighting for the person next to you. That homeland and family and all these things kind of get thrown out the window, and it's just your buddy. And so Achilles watched his buddy die. Well, didn't watch him die, but like, you know, is, I think, avenging that friend that was killed by the Trojans, and that the rage that you feel from that will fuel you much more than this kind of nobility, right? This kind of like, oh, because I think to some degree, maybe Hector is like, I don't want to see what happens next. You know, I don't want to watch. And Hecuba brings this up in the last part of the book, right? And when she imagines what's going to happen to Hector's son now that Hector's gone, right? And so part of me wonders if Hector doesn't want to see that, that, you know, Achilles is willing to give everything for his friend, and to some degree for Achilles' glory. But I think that what's fueling him is the rage over Patroclus. Whereas, you know, like we were saying earlier with Hector, doesn't have somebody who can help him and doesn't have a noble brother or noble friend that he is avenging or fighting for or fighting with. And Achilles has that noble friend that he loved that's dead, and that nothing's going to stop him. So, I don't know. It's an interesting thing to kind of draw out the difference, draw out the difference there, because it makes sense to me in terms of temperament and in terms of motivation and in terms of kind of ultimate result.
Mm-hmm. And just to mention briefly, we don't have time to get into this, but the next step would be, right, so we've considered whether Achilles and Hector are like or unlike, but Achilles does have this friend Patroclus. Are Patroclus and Hector like or unlike? And, you know, some of the things about the maturity of outlook that Shiloh has mentioned in connection with Hector, it might be possible to say them about Patroclus, although on the other hand, there seems to be a kind of subordination in the case of Patroclus that maybe Hector wouldn't endure, you know, in a friendship with Achilles. So it would be interesting if it were the case that Hector and Achilles couldn't abide one another, even if they were on the same side, and not just because they're enemies.
Yeah, I think that's a good point to wrap up on. So book 22 complete. Thanks, Jeff. Thanks, Shiloh. Thank you, dear listener. We are combatandclassics.org, at Combat and Classics on all the socials. You can donate at our website. You can rate us on your preferred podcast app. We appreciate your support. Thanks a lot, fellas, and we'll see everybody for book 23.
Thank you, guys.